Greetings, everyone, and welcome to our video podcast hosted by Security Magazine with our sponsor, Sajax. Today, of course, is Lisa Forte and Phil Ingram. And folks, this episode is going to be, well, it's going to be a bit geopolitical, but it's really going to be about cryptocurrency and its role in all sorts of crazy stuff. So I guess the big news item to kick it off would be the conviction of SBF and the fallout from that particular situation. Lisa, because you're following the legal stuff, your thoughts on the conviction? Is he innocent?
He would maintain that he was innocent. And it was not a Ponzi scheme.
Looking
exactly like a Ponzi scheme. So I don't know how much people know about this, but just to kind of give a rough kind of situation. So about a year ago, I think it was November 2022, FTX, which was a crypto kind of exchange, experienced what we would, I guess, know as a bank run, essentially. And the problem that a lot of crypto orgs have is that, unlike traditional financial institutions that have to maintain like a certain level of liquidity to avoid this particular situation, they didn't. People started withdrawing money, the whole thing collapsed, people lost money. And essentially what he was doing was he'd set up this corporate structure that was so immensely vast and complex. I can't remember how many entities within it, but it was layer after layer of complex corporate structure, which he claimed he did by accident, as we all have done. You know, Red Goat itself has like 329 entities to it.
Of course.
Those are the ones we know about.
I know, I don't even know all of them. I just keep clicking. And it just happened. But anyway, so he sent up this corporate structure, which looks obviously particularly like you were trying to obfuscate where money was moving. Essentially, what he was doing was taking client money that was paid into FTX, using that to essentially bail out another company that he owned that was
making bad bets.
A hedge
fund that he put in place using the money in the exchange.
Yeah.
Right.
And basically, they made some bad bets, and he bailed them out using client money. That kind of got leaked out. People started taking their money out. He didn't have enough money to pay out the money that people had put in. And that was essentially what had happened. And he got convicted, which was the correct, I think, correct judgment. He was, I think, 30, was he?
Yeah.
And what was quite interesting about him as a personality, though, was that he was actually a master of branding. Because throughout his career, I think a year before he got arrested, he was worth something like $25 billion. He was incredibly successful at what he did. And he'd done this PR campaign that made him look like an altruist. So he was always giving money, he was bailing out new projects, he was helping the community. He was also really putting pressure on the regulators to increase regulation in the crypto world. And what was kind of embarrassing was a chat that got leaked where he was basically admitting that the reason he'd done this was to manipulate regulators to not look at FTX.
Right.
Which went down badly.
One set of rules for everyone else in the industry. Now, there is another thing, though, because it was salacious. And having him on the testifying at the trial, not sure that really helped the situation at all, because he was involved in a relationship with his chief operating officer. And that went south. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that individual would have had inside information. It probably didn't go over particularly well.
Yeah. And I think we all felt for his lawyers who as a lawyer, you'd probably be saying to him, don't talk to the press. Don't talk to these people. Don't tweet. And yet, throughout the entire process from November 2022 to now, he was a loose cannon.
So is he using Donald Trump's lawyers?
Yeah. Well, this seems to be an interesting defense that I'm stupid and didn't know anything about it, as per Don Jr.
And this is why I think people are getting away with this sort of criminal activity in the crypto world. You know, if we break this down, it is simple criminal activity.
Yeah.
It's been enabled by the fact that crypto is this mystique area that people aren't sure about, don't really know about, and it's underpinned by this thing called blockchain technology. And again, you say that to people, they go, what's that? And you know, brand and marketing and being able to put yourself out there, that's how, you know, legitimate and illegitimate crypto tokens get themselves known, because they market themselves out. It's a community-based thing. And he got an expert at it, and then an expert at hiding it around.
Like Bernie Madoff.
Well,
essentially, a crypto version of Bernie Madoff.
And the other thing about crypto, and this is, you know, probably where his downfall came from, is once you then get to the attention of those from a law enforcement perspective, it's actually relatively straightforward to start to audit all of the transactions that go on.
That have gone through the wall.
Because they're immutable.
That's right.
And they can be downloaded and they can be looked at. It's just you have to have the knowledge, the technology and all the rest of it, which our law enforcement agencies are getting there. So you know, the FTX thing, I think, shows the weakness of where we are with crypto and cryptocurrencies, because it is an unregulated space. People don't understand it. There's vast amounts of money because you can make money on it. You can lose an awful lot of money on it. But it's that sort of thing where people will bet on horses that are going down. People will always go for something that suggests you can make an awful lot of money. And he's exploited that through very clever marketing. And whenever there was the crypto market was growing exponentially, so people didn't want to feel as if they were losing out on it.
Mm-hmm.
That, with a number of other things, have caused the crypto market to fail. But the majority of what's caused the crypto market not to fail, but to shrink enormously, are the wider geopolitical situation, which shows that crypto is as much linked to geopolitics as normal fiat currencies that are underpinned by central banks.
I think the thing for me with the FTX was the consumer harm that resulted.
Yeah.
I think was quite noticeable. And I work a lot in the financial services world, and traditional financial services institutions would have to maintain what they call high quality liquid assets, right?
Right.
So any change in market conditions, anything that happens to you as an organization, you have to basically notify the regulators that you're going liquid, essentially, and you've got to have this liquidity ratio that is regulated in order to protect consumers, combined with the fact that actually in most countries, certainly we can talk about the United Kingdom as we're here, the government will actually back and insure a lot of that consumer money. It's probably insured, or almost certainly insured. And so the consumers have a level of protection. And I don't think consumers understand that that is completely absent in crypto. And so the risk isn't just that you'll lose the money. The risk is that none of those protections that exist in traditional financial institutions will exist.
And none of those protections exist when it comes to the
collapse.
The total collapse. There are, however, some protections in place when it comes to transactions that are not necessarily legal, or where people have been ripped off or something else. And this is where the UK is beginning to lead the world in a lot of setting legal precedents around this. That's very interesting to watch.
So, and that's a great segue, because one of the things that has been concerning quite a bit was the evidence that suggests that terrorist organizations are using the cryptocurrency. In the case of the Arab terrorist organizations, Hezbollah, Hamas, which is in the news quite a bit, Islamic Jihad, it's been suggested that crypto exchanges and money washing services, of which have recently come under sanction by the United States, are being used to take the Bitcoin, where the wallets are traceable, turn it into a currency like Monero, which is not traceable, and then turning it back into Bitcoin in order to fund terrorist activities. To the published reports suggesting that $100 million was put by Iran, avoiding American sanctions at all, directly into the hands of Hamas.
Yeah.
This is a huge concern when you can outsource your terrorist organization, because it used to be if you rocked up with anything from diamonds to fiat currency in duffel bags, it was pretty easy to get caught. But now this stuff moves through the organization, and there's and under the Arab Sharia system, there's a banking that is like word of mouth.
Yep.
Right, and that's now been digitized. So I guess not only is there a huge sanction avoidance issue here, but there's also some very unsavory individuals are getting access to the banking system via cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
What's being done about it?
Yeah.
It's very difficult, I think. I've done a lot of work on looking at Monero. And I must say, Monero, I think, is absolutely genius. So in the crypto space, privacy, we'll call it privacy, can be provided either natively, which is how Monero does it, which is at protocol level, or app-based, which is what happens on the Bitcoin and Ethereum blockchain, which is essentially mixes like Tornado Cash, which I'm sure we'll come on to later. So Monero provides two aspects of privacy, which is really interesting. It's untraceability and unlinkability, which are the two founding principles behind it. So untraceability is we don't know where this money is going and how it's moving between entities. And unlinkability is I don't know that that money is even owned by you or that account is even owned by you. So it provides this whole like 360 privacy, and it does that through stealth addresses and ring signatures and things like this. But what's really interesting, so taking this into the ransomware world for a second, when Colonial Pipeline got hit by DarkSide, there was a big move to try and recover some of that Bitcoin.
That's
and
right.
They recovered some.
Yeah.
In fact, it's pretty much the only case that we ever cite of a time when we actually disrupted crypto.
There's
flowing.
One more. It's the Kaseya hack as well,
yeah.
Where the FBI was able to recover funds. But it's,
the transactions that have happened, it's like one or two that we can actually cite.
Right.
But what that did do was it actually set a lot of fear into the ransomware groups. And what we then saw was heavily discounted ransoms if you paid in Monero or another privacy coin as opposed to Bitcoin, because it's cheaper, quicker, and more efficient to launder money through those. And I would argue largely you are completely safe. No one's going to figure it out. And as a result, they can launder, like you said, for the first time in history, criminal gangs can launder hundreds of millions instantly with absolutely no concern.
This is a huge issue. What are the geopolitical ramifications?
Well, this is where you're from the fiat currency and traditional banks and all the rest of it, they've all signed up to international protocols, international rules to look for big cash movements that could be helping to fund terrorism, could be coming from serious and organized crime, and they will automatically produce alerts that will go into the different agencies in their different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how a lot of that's found. And this is why you're moving money in and out using cryptocurrency of whatever flavor is something that got popular first and foremost with the ransomware gangs. They always asked for Bitcoin, and because everyone naturally assumed it was untraceable, until they suddenly realized, no, it's perfectly traceable. And that's where Monero and technology is always enabling those that want to hide and the criminal elements to try and stay one step forward. However, the authorities know that Monero's there, and they know that Monero is where a lot of this will start to be used. So they will look at transactions that are going into it, and then look at transactions that are coming out of it, because at the end of the day, the criminals or the terrorist organizations will want to enable their activities by using either another cryptocurrency or by using fiat cash. And at some stage, there are transactions that are in there. It's very difficult to trace where they've come from. And that's, once it's been in this big, untraceable, untrackable blob. But that's something that they're spending an awful lot of effort into trying to tie down. In reality, when you look at the amount of fraudulent money that moves around the world in crypto compared to fiat currency, for every dollar that is moved around in crypto illegally, $8 is still moved around in fiat currency illegally.
In traditional ways.
So the traditional ways is significantly more. The crypto is something that is up and coming as more and more organizations become more au fait with the technology behind it, whether they be ransomware gangs, whether they be terrorist organizations, and now governments are playing catch up, as are law enforcement. As they play catch up, they're playing catch up quite fast. And then from a legal perspective, the recovery of money is difficult at times. The freezing of accounts and the freezing of money isn't. And this is where the UK has set legal precedents. Not just in the cryptocurrency world, but also in the NFT world, so digital asset world. And the UK has set legal precedents in being able to get an NFT that has been stolen by an unknown account, frozen by a crypto exchange, so that it can't be transacted until the ownership can be proved back to who it was stolen from and recovered back to there. That is a massive, massive legal precedence in an area that is unregulated across the globe. And it was done by a law firm and a set of barristers based in London.
And that's a good thing, I think, because if there are no rules, it's up to the nation states to get together and figure out what a treaty looks like for this. It's deeply problematic when you have some countries that are banning cryptocurrency in all forms and shape, and others that are adopting it. Venezuela, for instance, is looking at pegging their fiat currency to Bitcoin and the value of Bitcoin, which I guess ultimately is pinned against the US dollar, which, you know, is arguably still the currency of choice for transaction, international transactions. However, that is disputed because we have the war with Russia where there are financial sanctions in place to prevent Russian money moving back and forth into the international, mostly because they fear that Russia is going to use it to buy weapons and stuff like that to perpetuate the war against Ukraine. The question, though, is Russia able to move and maneuver as a result of using Bitcoin currencies?
I don't quite think it's got that level. The answer is yes and no.
North Korea manages to very successfully evade sanctions and fund a lot of things all through cryptocurrency.
Well, I think they fund just about everything through cryptocurrency.
Including breaking in to other people's cryptocurrency system.
And heavily sanctioned as a state.
Heavily.
But I think the difference between North Korea is a dictatorship, and everything is controlled by the dictator, including the use of cryptocurrency. So the use of computers, to be honest. So it's dictator regulated instead of central bank regulated. The cryptocurrency that goes in and out of the computers out of there. Whereas Russia still relies on fiat currency to underpin its whole economy in the way that every country around the world relies on fiat currency controlled by the country's central bank. That is the principal tool that they have to be able to enable their political activities and their political interactions with other main countries. This is where cryptocurrency comes in, where it's unregulated. Yeah. It can't be controlled by central banks. And this is where it undermines the whole being and economic structures that there are around the world, and therefore political structures that are around the world, which is why you get the likes of Christine Lagarde from the IMF, who's hypercritical of crypto, and a lot of the comments that she comes out with are not based on fact.
No,
they're based on this emotion that comes from the fact that if everyone adopted a Bitcoin type cryptocurrency that was unregulated, it undermines our whole political system as we have it at the moment. Apart from in North Korea, where your political system can control your access in and out with everything.
There are some advantages, I guess. There's pretty short chain of command.
Dictatorships can be good.
But I think, to look at the larger question of cryptocurrency is not necessarily a new problem, right? Mm-hmm. But it is something that courts are only starting to engage with to get the legal precedents in place. The SEC has declared that some coins and some NFTs are now considered securities, and they have to be have the appropriate, as you mentioned, sort of liquidity values and disclosure. But an interesting point just before we went on to the video podcast that you made was you can have P. Diddy hawking P. Diddy coin, providing financial advice with no repercussions whatsoever.
Correct.
Okay, let's dig into that.
So there is a slight caveat to that. France actually has passed a law that says that you cannot put out disinformation with regards to crypto. You have to warn people about the risks if you advertise crypto. But they're the only country that I know of that has done anything close to that. And I think this is one of two problems, really. The first is that we've got this situation where you go on social media, people who have, with all due respect to them, a low level of technology literacy can very easily download an app, put money into whatever coin, whatever NFT, whatever project that has been marketed aggressively on social media by someone purporting to be some sort of financial guru with zero credentials. And there's no recourse at the moment for that individual who has gone down that path. And that's a situation that we've typically been very, very keen to restrict in the traditional financial markets. And we've heavily come down on, you can't provide financial advice. You have to be regulated. You have to do this. You have to do that.
You have to be licensed, I think.
You have
too.
To be licensed. And that's, I think, for me, the thing people don't necessarily realize in the crypto space, and I'm talking about some of the sort of diehard crypto fans, not sort of the business use case of crypto, is that the regulation that we have in the financial markets that we have is because of the problems that you are experiencing in crypto. We had that in the traditional financial services market, and we've regulated to try and restrict the harm to consumers that that caused. And so you're going through the same journey. And I think that's one of the really big problems with crypto, along with, and I think we need to talk about this at some point, as we touched on North Korea.
Well, why don't we talk about it right now?
KYC.
Yes.
Yes.
So, for example, for people who don't know, KYC, Know Your Customer, is a way of ascertaining that if Ian opens a bank account with me, it is Ian, and Ian is allowed to open a bank account, and he can prove to me that he is Ian, and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And there was always traditional ways of doing that. Everyone who's ever set up a bank account will know, have been through the KYC process for sure. And the KYC process was implemented, I think it traced back to 1970s, but it was sort of 1990s that it really took off. And it was a way of basically stopping counterterrorism financing, wasn't it? And sort of anti-money laundering regulations came in. It came into crypto around 2019. And the problem that you have with crypto is that it's very difficult to prove digitally you are who you say you are when you open the account. And Jeff White, who has written the Lazarus Heist book about Lazarus Group and North Korea, gave an absolutely spectacular talk. And he was saying about how actually authorities worked out who owned the crypto accounts that had basically stolen 600 million. Mm. And they found these two profiles that came through the Know Your Customer checks with the exchanges. One was a gentleman in South Korea, one was a gentleman in Germany. And they were like, yeah, we've got them. This is brilliant. They looked into a bit more. The hand on both photos holding the passport was exactly the same.
Wow.
The person did not exist. Mm. That face did not exist. The passport, these people did not exist. And they'd pass KYC checks just by photoshopping. It poses a really big problem because, as you said, yeah, cool, you can trace it to this account. Now what?
Yeah, and this is where you know, that was with relatively old Photoshop technology. This is where generative AI is going to make it even worse. And this comes into wider identity management. How do you then prove that something's got that identity? And what hasn't kept up with KYC for crypto is properly managing people's identity and getting that. Now, the underpinning technology of cryptocurrency, the blockchain, could be used to be able to verify people's identity. So if your identity cards and everything else were locked to a block on the blockchain, having been verified by government and by all of the authorities and all the rest of that's in there, then you provided that as a token to verify what's going on is one way of solving it instantly. That technology hasn't been brought in, and this is where the lack of regulation and the lack of government oversight and different organizations getting together is stopping that. Those safety checks keeping up with the technological advances that are enabling the fraud of it. And there's the other bit that comes into not the fraud of it, but I'd also bring in influence and information, disinformation, everything else. You mentioned France bringing a law saying you can't put any disinformation out about crypto and everything else. But if you've got an influencer who comes in and says something
like
and puts
Ian.
A statement out, like Ian, or his bigger brother,
huge
Elon,
on the gram,
his bigger brother Elon Musk. Whenever Elon Musk turned around and said you can now buy Tesla cars with Bitcoin, the Bitcoin value shot up.
Yeah,
and he then a few weeks later turned around and said, I don't like Bitcoin anymore. I've got this token that when you...
Dogecoin.
It was Dogecoin. And when you look at Dogecoin, there was nothing sensible about it or backing it at all.
It was designed as a joke.
It was designed as a joke.
And he then said, you can now buy it with that. That's my favorite coin. Bitcoin value dropped.
Yeah.
Dogecoin went through the roof.
Exactly.
I wonder if he bought a lot of Dogecoin. And you get very, very wealthy influencers have got the ability to manipulate the market in a way that, and I'm not saying Elon did, in case his lawyers are listening, but they've got the ability to do that in a way that the regulation that there is in the wider financial markets isn't there. And that allows speculation to happen in ways, and you influence that speculation, that leaves a really bad taste in your mouth. And when you start to look at some of the owners of the bigger crypto wallets, you know, the majority of the money that's sitting in crypto is owned by a relatively small number of people around the place.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, lots of people with a lot smaller amounts that are in there that are the ones that either win because they're in the right coin where the influencer says, hey, that's great. Or they lose because you know, they jump in at the last minute and think, oh, that's rising, I must buy. And then the influencer says, ah, I'll go for this one instead. And they lose their investment.
So what are we doing from a regulatory perspective? Are we making it up as we go along, allowing some people to say some things, but then trying to hold other people accountable? Because I will say this, you do see fiat currency move depending on what the central bank mm-hmm. says or what the economy, the economic outlook of the country is. But it's not a giant, you know, from zero to hero type of change. Is cryptocurrency then the values exacerbated by what comes out of people's mouths?
So first point, Elon Musk has had some restrictions. So I think it was after the GameStop saga, he was told that he had to only tweet things in that vein through his lawyers. His lawyers had to prove the tweets first.
He was also not allowed to do it high. I think was another...
Just confiscate the man's phone, someone. So that was the first thing. The second thing that you mentioned about sort of being able to, I guess, just say whatever you want. I think one thing for me with regulation is that I sort of going to have to respectfully disagree with Phil on one part. I actually don't think regulators get it with crypto at all.
Oh, no, I agree. I agree. If I suggested they did, I'm wrong. Regulators don't get it.
And I think that's evidenced by the United States sanctioning Tornado Cash.
Right. Okay.
And Tornado Cash, smart contract mixer, sits on the Ethereum blockchain. Essentially, a mixing service is, you know, your Bitcoin, my Bitcoin, mixed up, paid out into different denominations, into different accounts, untraceable. It's a smart contract. So it's basically a piece of code, essentially, that sits there that says, if X happens, do Y, essentially. Yeah. Not very complicated. Code obviously can't be good or bad. It's not capable of being evil or anything like that. And as a response to the $600 million that got stolen by the North Koreans, the Americans decided that they were going to sanction Tornado Cash. So Tornado Cash got sanctioned by the United States. And it's a really strange decision, in my opinion, because it isn't controlled by anyone. It's not a person. It's not a company. You can't take it down. You can't stop it from working. It will carry on in perpetuity. It has no effect whatsoever, which I think highlights that they have absolutely no comprehension whatsoever about cryptocurrency or how any of it works. What was funny, though, at the moment they did that, a load of people decided to do something in the crypto space called dusting. And what dusting essentially is that Tornado Cash is sanctioned. So any money moving through Tornado Cash to any recipient would therefore be a US government sanction violation.
Right.
So what people decided to do was to send money via Tornado Cash to celebrities like Jimmy Fallon, Snoop Dogg, who are all technically at this point that they received this money in violation of US sanctions, which everyone found really funny.
Yeah.
And I think made a mockery of what they'd just done.
That's going to gain the ire, shall we say, of the U.S. government. And as many people have found out, being on the wrong side of the U.S. government is a terrible place to be. But you're right.
But they couldn't find the code to bomb, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they can't bring democracy to a smart contract.
How can we kill it? No. Can somebody, let's roundtable it. So this is really interesting because I think, you know, in the idea now of generative AI and that machines will be making decisions based on certain criteria, how do you put the cuffs on something like that? Obviously, I mean, if there's a bunch of people advertising that capability to the criminal underground, now you have intent and you can slap the cuffs on those people. But a completely automated system like you're describing is, you know, horrendously difficult to... Well, how can we even consider taking it off the blockchain? Is that
No, you can't, because the blockchain enables it. You know, there's
we're shutting down cryptocurrency globally.
How can we deal with it, with those that who want to continue to carry out illegal transactions and all the rest of it? We can't at the minute. You know, it's a Wild West free for all out there, and that's one of the problems that there is in the crypto world. However, there are an awful lot of legitimate uses for cryptocurrencies, for crypto assets, for smart contracts. An increasing number of legitimate uses for smart contracts. But this is where getting the right sort of legal advice is absolutely essential, because because it's a minefield, and it's a minefield that is continuously shifting because of the changes in the US regulation, things that the IMF are bringing in, other countries banning different types of crypto, and where things are held on different blockchains. Bitcoin is a blockchain as well as a cryptocurrency that's there, and it's trying to understand where this is really, really complex and really difficult indeed. So if people are using crypto in its widest sense, assets and currencies and everything else, they must get a good legal team behind them to understand where it's going.
To do it legitimately and not...
And then what they're doing is whenever something comes in and you get... an accidental sanction busting bit, they can turn around and prove that they have done everything that is possible, and that therefore the chances of something legally coming back onto them as responsibility is greatly reduced.
It's unlikely, though, the ransomware groups will start having a chief compliance officer in charge of making sure they're compliant with local regulations.
They've got HR officers, and they've got...
I wouldn't be surprised if they had a chief compliance officer.
It literally wouldn't surprise me, because what their chief compliance officer will do in the ransomware gangs is be looking at where they can find the holes in what's going on in different countries to get round the compliance issues that are there, because the amount of money that they're moving around, the same with those that are looking from a terrorist perspective, the same with those countries that are wanting to move large elements of money around in crypto world and not have it flagged up to the different regulators or crime agencies that are there. With the FBI and the UK's National Crime Agency and Europol leading the way in dealing with a lot of this stuff. But they will have compliance officers.
It's interesting to me because...
anti-compliance officers.
When you see the doors kicked in on ransomware groups and then they say, we've recovered wallets with a bunch of money in it. Well, at that point, the stat of the illegal use of Bitcoin goes up a little bit. The last part of our discussion on crypto, I think, is the more insidious one. It has a direct relationship for nation states and or individuals to back various political movements nearly anonymously at home.
Yes.
Now, we're coming into a very delicate time where already The Economist this morning came out with basically dire warnings about a second Trump presidency. The Trump presidency would be very favorable, I think, to Russia.
Yes.
There has been suggestions that Trump is actually a Russian asset that they put in place. But I guess what I'm saying is now we're seeing this global sort of like fundraising effort via Bitcoin to destabilize things here at home as a threat to democracy.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's the same argument as with ransomware groups. We can't stop that. And we can't stop this. We can't trace it. If you want it to be hidden, it will be hidden if you use crypto. As you said, if you're using it legitimately, yes, it's fully traceable and that's great. And that's the purpose really of it all, right? To provide this immutable blockchain. But if you want to hide anything, it's perfect for that. It's a perfect tool for that. And I think it is a really big concern because actually you won't know where it's coming from. You won't necessarily be able to audit that chain back because actually, and certainly no third party would be able to audit it. So you might know that it's come from me, but Phil wouldn't know that I'd sent you money. So it's deniable, which is basically where we're at, I think. And I think it's a really big concern. I think a lot of these things really do favor Russia, to be honest. I think a lot of the geopolitics that's happening at the moment really favors Russia, which is a bit of a tragedy for Ukraine.
Well, and Russia leverages off two things. One, it's the state infrastructure that it's got to be able to move whatever assets it needs to wherever it needs it around the world to enable the disinformation campaigns or the influence campaigns that it's got. And they always increase as you're running up to different political activities in countries in the West. And they then use their ransomware groups that are in Russia. It's one of the reasons why so many operate out of Russia, because Russia will turn a blind eye, provided those ransomware groups pay their tax Mm-hmm. The tax isn't necessarily just money. It's carrying out activities on behalf of the state.
Yeah.
And those activities will be, you know, moving that money around so that using the routes that they know to keep it hidden so they can get it into the areas that they can start to influence things. You know, I know of, and political influence is something that is very, very carefully controlled in most democracies where political parties have to declare where their funding comes from and all the rest of it. I know of political parties in the UK where, you know, funding is coming from groups of individuals who've set up shell company behind shell company behind shell company behind charity behind shell company to hide where the real money's coming from, and, you know, the declared bits all seems completely open but isn't linked to these individuals in any way. Crypto allows that to happen, and, you know, if nation states are doing it, allows it to happen in a way that is very difficult for countries to track.
All right, well, that's been Around the Table on Crypto, or Crypto Cubed, as I think we talked about, the good, the bad, and the, well, we don't even know.